Madhamadava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parivraj Yukacharya Shtuttara Shatashri Shimbad His Divine Grace Shadehi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishna Vrinda Ki Jai Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Go Premanande Hare Ribo Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Agarish the Assembly Devotee Agarish to the Assembled Devotee Agarish to the Assembled Devotee Agarish to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Janma Jasiyaton Vayari Taratas Chartesh Bingya Swaratene Brahma Ridaya Ari Kavaye Muyanti Yasuraya Tejo Vari Mridam Yitavini Mayo Yatra Trisargo Marsha Dhamna Swena Sada Nerustaku Akam Satyam Param Dhimahi धर्म प्रोजित कैतवोत्र परमो नियमत्सराणां सुतां बीजं वास्तवमत्र वस्तु शिवदं तापत्रयोन्मूलनम् श्रीमद्भागवते महामुनिकृते किं वा परयरीश्वरे सज्जोरुद्यमरुज्यते इति कृतिभिषुभिस्तक्षण निगमकौपतरोर्गलितं फलं शुकमुकारमृतदर्वसंयुतं पीबतभागवतं रसमालयं महोरहुलसिका भुवि भावुकः. These are the introductory verses of Srimad-Bhagavatam. I was just reading, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that when Vyasadev spoke Bhagavatam to Shukadev Goswami, he recited these three verses as he began his teaching to his son Shukadev Goswami. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 21, Conversation between Manu and Kardama. Section number 18. Word meanings. Na, not, te, your. So this is Kardama Muni is speaking to Lord Vishnu at this point. So your means you, Lord Vishnu. Ajara, of imperishable Brahman. Aksha, on the axle. Brahmi, rotating. Ayu, span of life. Esham, of the devotees. Trayodasha, 13. Aram, spokes. Trishatam, 300. Shashti, 60. Parva, functions. Shat, 6. Nami, rims. Ananta, innumerable. Chadi, leaves. Yat, which, three. Nabhi, knaves. Karala, shrota, with tremendous velocity. Jagat, the universe. Achidya, cutting short. Tavat, running. Nate jaraksha brahmira yuresham. Trayodasharam trishatam shasti parva. Shanemyananta chariyatrinabhi. Karala shroto jagarach chidya cha davat. Chidya davat. Nate jaraksha brahmira yuresham. Trayodasharam trishatam shasti parva. Shanemyananta chariyatrinabhi. Karala shroto jagarach chidyatavat. Nate jaraksha brahmira yuresham. Yayodasharam trishatam shasti parva. Janemyananta chariyatrinabhi. Karala shruto jagarach chidyathavat. Nate jaraksha brahmira yuresham. Yayodasharam trishatam shasti parvam. Anemyanantyacharyantninabhi Kralashuto jagarachidhyadavat Nate jaraksha brahmira yuresham Tayo rasharam trishitam shasti parva Anemyananda chari chantrinabhi Karala sroto jagarashtidhidhavat Nate jaraksha brahmira yuresham Tayo rasharam trishitam shasti parva Anemyanantacharyatrinabhi Karala sroto jagarashchidyadavat Nate jaraksha brahmira yuresham Tayo rasharam trishitam shasti parva Chanemyanantacharyatrinabhi Karala sroto jagarashchidyadavat Jidhavat Nate jaraksha brahmira yuresham Tayo rasharam trishatam shasti parva Yanemyanantacharyatrinabhi Karala shoto jagarat chityadavat Nate jaraksha brahmira yuresham Yayo rasharam trishitam shasti parva Anemyanantacharyatrinabhi Karala sroto jagarashchidyadavat
Translation. Your wheel, which has three knaves, rotates around the axis of the imperishable Brahman. It has 13 spokes, 360 joints, six rims, and numberless leaves carved upon it. Though its revolution cuts short the lifespan of the entire creation, this wheel of tremendous velocity cannot touch the lifespan of the devotees of the Lord. I don't know. I was thinking the same thing. I should have looked it up. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The time factor cannot affect the span of life of the devotees. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that a little execution of devotional service saves one from the greatest danger. The greatest danger is transmigration of the soul from one body to another, and only devotional service to the Lord can stop this process. It is stated in the Vedic literatures, Hariṁ vinā naiva śrutiṁ taranti, without the mercy of the Lord, one cannot stop the cycle of birth and death. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that only by understanding the transcendental nature of the Lord and his activities, his appearance and disappearance, can one stop the cycle of death and go back to him. The time factor is divided into many fractions of moments, hours, months, years, periods, seasons, etc. All the divisions in this verse are determined according to the astronomical calculations of Vedic literature. There are six seasons called ritus, and there is the period of 4 months called chaturmasya. Three periods of 4 months complete 1 year. According to Vedic astronomical calculations, there are 13 months. The 13th month is called Udhi Mas or Mula Masa, and it is added every third year. The time factor, however, cannot touch the lifespan of the devotees. In another verse, it is stated that when the sun rises and sets, it takes away the life of all living entities, but it cannot take away the life of those who are engaged in devotional service. Time is compared here to a big wheel which has 360 joints, six rims in the shape of seasons, and numberless leaves in the shape of moments. It rotates on the eternal existence, Brahman. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Amajñāna timirāntasya jñānāñjana shalākaya cakṣuran militam mena tasmai śrī gurave namaha. Still struggling to think about what to talk about with this verse. I did a web search for the verse number, and I discovered it in November of 1996, Sariputta Prabhu gave a class on this verse. And you can find it on richardlthompson.com if you want to go look for it. So I was saying, maybe I should just read the whole thing. Actually, when Sariputta Prabhu was here, they generally, the class scheduler to try to give him some verse that had some scientific aspect to it. So sometimes he would say, I guess I'm supposed to give the scientific angle on this, you know. So here's a little excerpt from that class. He says, this is, I think, like the, not right in the beginning, but one of the first points that he makes. He says, now it happens, as it happens, a lunar month is just short of 30 days. Actually, it's 29.53 days. That's a lunar month. And this creates various complexities because, well, for one thing, you don't have an integer number of days in a month. In other words, you don't have a round number, 29.53. So what they did was take that 29.53 days and divide it into 30 equal intervals. Now this, actually, he talks a little bit before this about how you'll find in the Vedic literature a year is always 360 days, not 365 days. So he'll, actually, maybe he'll go back to that here. Anyway, so that's why he's saying, they're dividing, so a month is 30 intervals, which are not 30 days exactly. Those are called tithis. Huh? So we've heard this word, right? Tithi. And so then you have 30 of those in a month. So it works out very nicely. It turns out that Ekadashi, for example, is a tithi. Ekadashi is not an ordinary 24-hour day, but it's one of these 30th of a month divisions. So that's a little something you probably didn't know. I didn't know. I mean, I know that the Ekadashi doesn't follow necessarily from, you know, 12:01 a.m. till, you know, 24 hours like that. You know, that's why we have the break fast at different times, for example. So it doesn't match up necessarily with the 24 hours on our clock. And that's because of this, because the day is, or a month is 29.53 days long, according to some astronomical calculation. I don't know how they arrive at it exactly. So then he goes on. So now, as it turns out, if you have 12 months, which are about 29 point something days, you see that doesn't come out even to 360 days. So 12 months of these 29.53 day months. It comes out a little short of 360. So what do you do? Well, Prabhupada is pointing out here what in fact is done. It turns out you come about 10 days short And so in 3 years, you're about 30 days short. So you add another month. And that's an adimas. So we have this Purushottama adimas. So that's where that comes from. Every 3 years, it's stuck in the middle of the calendar, in the middle of some other month, actually. So you add that in there. Let's see. Adimas. And that's the 13th month that's being referred to in this verse. And it turns out that there are fairly sophisticated calculations for doing that. I was looking into that, and there's an interesting story there having to do with the beginning of Kali Yuga. Now, we say that Kali Yuga began 5,000 years ago, but in fact, there's an exact date that Kali Yuga began on, February 18th, 3102 BC. And let me be more exact. Kali Yuga began at 12 o'clock in the morning on February 18th, 3102 BC. Actually, he says later in the lecture how he went on, he says it, I forget what he said. He said, I used the Pentium. I think he was talking about the Pentium chip was an earlier, right, computer chip. And he did some calculations. He was saying how amazing how you could do all these calculations for different things on the internet now because they have these, you know, software, you can calculate all kinds of things. So he did this apparently, he went on the internet and used some program and he did these calculations. So, Sariputta Prabhu ki jai. So today's verse, as the Prabhupada begins his purport, the time factor cannot affect the span of life of the devotees. Of course, that's what the verse says also. So I read that, then the next line. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that a little execution of devotional service saves one from the greatest danger. So I was kind of having a hard time figuring, what is the connection between these? How does little devotional service saves one from the greatest danger? How does that tie into cannot affect the life of the devotees? Usually, of course, what is that? By the way, that verse is actually in the context of karma yoga, not devotional service, pure devotional service. Krishna is speaking about in the second chapter, that part of the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So, neha bikrama nashosti patyavaya navidyate swapamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bayat. So, a little advancement on this path protects one from the most dangerous type of fear. So what does that have to do with it doesn't affect the life of the devotees? So basically, what Prabhupada goes on, the greatest danger is transmigration of the soul from one body to another, and only devotional service to the Lord can stop this process. So it's still not quite on point here. So here's what Prabhupada says in one purport. Is this in a purport? I think so. Or maybe this is a verse. Anyway, it says... I'll give you the context here. This is from 424.57. The devotees of the Lord are not under the jurisdiction of Yamaraj. Yamaraj is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he controls the death of every living entity. Yet he has nothing to do with the devotees. Simply by blinking his eyes, time personified can destroy the entire cosmic manifestation. But he has nothing to do with the devotee. In other words, devotional service, which is rendered by the devotee in this lifetime, can never be destroyed by time. Such spiritual assets remain unchanged, being beyond the influence of time. So I think there's sort of a thought missing between, I think, Prabhupada's first two sentences. The idea is that time it destroys. That's the idea. One of the main, we find this theme over and over again in the Bhagavatam, how time is a destroyer. Of course, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita too, right? Mrityu sarvaharas chaham. Or last time I gave class, I was talking about this. Krishna's name is Hari. So what is Hari? Hari steals. He steals away. So he steals away our life, steals away all of our assets, steals away everything. So when you engage in devotional service, then your assets, devotional service which is rendered by the devotee in this lifetime can never be destroyed by time. So that's why this verse, Neha Bikrabo, it protects you from the most dangerous type of fear, because the devotional service that you performed is not destroyed by time. That's the idea. Usually, whatever you do in this life is destroyed by time. It's the great destroyer, but devotional service is not. So that's how the devotees are free from the influence of time. That's the idea that's kind of there. So this is one of the main aspects of time. When I was looking at this, I think, well, when we talk about time, there are different things. Prabhupada shifts gears. One thing you know, you may notice in Prabhupada's books, are very long paragraphs. So when they were the transcribers of listening to the tapes, they would only put a paragraph and Prabhupada said para. He would say para, then they would put in a paragraph. And Prabhupada didn't put in very many of those. So sometimes, just like this is all one paragraph, this whole purport. But there's actually a division where he sort of shifts gears, that it probably should have been another paragraph there. When he starts talking about the divisions of time, it's a different kind of, you can talk about time as a great destroyer, you can talk about time as being made up of all these divisions. This is one thing that I always, of course, the Bhagavatam has a lot of what you might call material information, I guess you might say, and sometimes you wonder, why should I know this? Just like that chapter, what is it, the 11th chapter of the third canto, calculation of time from the atom. So if you read that, you think, why do I need to know this? Do I need to know this? What difference does it make how time is divided up? But we find actually quite a bit in the Bhagavatam in different places. Just like here, this whole metaphor of how time is divided up in different ways. So what is the significance of that, actually? I'm not exactly sure what the significance is. Maybe it's just telling us this is the way it's done. Now, one thing we learn in that calculation of time from the atom is that the smallest unit of time from which everything else eventually is counted, larger spans of time, the smallest unit of time is the time that it takes the sun to pass over one paramanu. That's all, that time span is also called the paramanu. Now, paramanu would be generally translated just as an atom, because we tend to think of atoms as the smallest particle. Well, we don't think that way anymore. But what it means, the paramanu is in the Vedic conception, the smallest particle of matter is called a paramanu. And the time it takes for the sun to pass over that paramanu is called the paramanu of time. So one thing that it's showing is that the calculation of time, it has some, because in one sense, time is, well, it's above everything else. It's not, time is not included. You may notice that in the elements of material creation, the constituents of the material world, there's 16, and then there are more, so and you end up with 23, basically. But time is not included there. What you have, maybe I should review this. There are four groups of five, first of all. So you have the Mahabhutas, Panch Mahabhutas, with earth, water, fire, air, ether. Then you have the two kinds of senses, right? The senses by which you take in, we say knowledge-acquiring senses, and the senses by which you act on the world, the karmendriyas. So you have the jnanendriyas and the karmendriyas. So now you have 15. And then you have the sense objects, sound, form, touch, taste, and smell. So it's not so hard to remember what those 20 are. They're these four groups of five. And then you have mind, intelligence, and ego, or false ego. So then you get those 23. Sometimes you get added to these material nature itself. Somehow the subtle material nature is sometimes added in there. Of course, then you have the jiva and paramatman. So there are different ways, but anyway, this is the basic idea. So I was looking at this and I was thinking, well, we usually hear that material nature is composed of the modes of material nature. Sometimes they're taken as synonymous. What is material nature? It's the three modes, because they're so integral to it. So I thought, how come they're not included in that list? So I started looking around, and what I found was actually the three modes of material nature are part of Prakriti before there's any transformation, before anything starts happening. You may remember reading that in Prakriti, the three modes of material nature are in equilibrium. So in the modes of material nature in equilibrium, nothing happens. But they're actually part of the material energy, you could say, before anything happens. So then what happens? What happens is the glance of the Lord, which is called the time factor, the time, that gets things happening. That starts stirring up the modes of material nature, so they start interacting. And then we hear about how this is produced, and from that, from subtle things evolve into more gross. So this is, of course, this is Sankhya philosophy. We have our version, our Kapila Dev, and then there's the atheist Kapila Dev, who is the author of one of the six main philosophies of Indian philosophy. That's Sankhya philosophy. So we agree generally. Basically, the only idea is that he's an atheist, so he doesn't have the eternal supreme personality of Godhead overseeing the whole thing. But that, of course, is the key to our understanding of it. But anyway, getting back to the point before I went off on this tangent, the idea that the sun goes across this very minute material element, and then everything, you start adding up, there are two of these make this, and then three of those are, whatever, it makes a longer period of time, it keeps going up. So it's based on something real. Just like in Sariputta is explaining here, this is, real things looking up into the sky, and these things are happening. We see how ancient civilizations, they were so obsessed with the sky. They were really, of course, one thing, they didn't have light pollution like we have now. You can't really see the stars in the sky, but they would see the stars in the sky, and they would observe, of course, those who were more scientifically minded, they would see, what's happening here exactly? Now, so the time is based on astronomy, ultimately, when you get right down to it. That's what we have, our way of counting time based on real things that are happening in the celestial sphere. So it's not just an arbitrary thing. I sometimes wondered about this, a little aside. There's this one Christian denomination, the Seventh-day Adventists. They believe that you have to, Sunday's not the holy day, Saturday is. That's the seventh day, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So I always wondered, how do they know what day Saturday is? Because where do you start? You have to start somewhere, right? So there must be some astrological, which I don't know, actually, why, January 1st is when it is, or why Sunday, what day do you pick out, say this is Sunday, then you have 7 days. Of course, this has actually evolved over time. If you look into this, what the nature of time over the centuries, over the ages, things have changed. There were times, I think there was an 8-day week and, things like that. So somehow when they understood what's happening in the heavens more clearly, then they came up with the system that we have today. So they're observing. Now, one thing we observe, you can observe it yourself, if you can see the stars, is every night, the sky rotates around the pole star. Of course, the pole star is Dhruva Maharaj, or his place, the place of Dhruva Maharaj. So the planets go around. Like most of us, if we can't recognize anything in the sky, we can probably recognize the Big Dipper. So the Big Dipper actually goes, it's part of what's going around. And you can see, if you look at it when the sun first, of course it does for a time, it goes beneath the horizon, at least at certain times of the year. So you may not see it all night long. But it goes around. You can watch, you can see it in one spot, and then 6 hours later, you'll see how it's moved around and it's circling around that pole star. This is all described in the Bhagavatam also, how the especially certain planets, one thing about the Big Dipper, as we call it, Ursula Major, that's the abodes of the seven rishis. Now, I remember Gopi Pranadan Prabhu explaining, and maybe we're not seeing their abodes necessarily, but he says these are like markers because they exist on a more subtle plane. So these are their markers. And just incidentally, the seven rishis, they change with every Indra. So Indra rules for, well, he rules for a manvantara. Yes, for a with every manvantara, just like now we're in Vaivasvata Manu. So we have a certain Indra. His name is Purandara. And in the next Manu, what's his name? I forget right now. But he then Bali Maharaj is going to be Indra in the next one. And then one of the rishis, I think it's in the next one, yes, one of the rishis, of this, one of the seven rishis in the next Manvantara is our Vyasadeva. He's going to be one of those stars up there. If you're around that long, you can think that he's up there. So anyway, these, the whole cosmos, especially these stars, there's a description in the fifth canto about, because one thing is that Prabhupada sometimes uses the word universe, where it's not exactly, you know, the Brahmanda ruled over, but sometimes he talks about the universe. He's only talking about really where the sun shines. The sun shines only up to Swargaloka, or including Swargaloka. It's in Bhubuvarswa, Tri Loka. That's another thing, that phrase is used differently sometimes. Sometimes we may think of Tri Loka, the three worlds, as the lower, middle, and upper planetary systems. But Tri Loka is sometimes used to mean Bhubuvarswa, the first three of the seven upper planetary systems. So that's where the sun shines. The sun is actually situated. Now we have our, I'm sure you're all familiar with the Bhumandala, that it looks like a disk, a plane. It's not exactly a plane, but it's very close to it, where these different planets orbit, as Sariputta figured out. So this is this Bhumandala, which is explained in the fifth canto. So then there's a space above Bhumandala before you get to Bhuvarloka. Bhuvarloka is where the yakshas and rakshasas and the vidyadharas and these semi-demigods, they exist in that area between earth and heaven, in that area. So the sun is actually in between the earth and Bhuvarloka. That's where it's situated. And again, it shines only up to Swargaloka. Then above that, well, the moon is above that. That's when, you know, Prabhupada said the moon is farther away than the sun. And actually, Prabhupada, I think I was there for that class Prabhupada was giving in Los Angeles. At least I've heard it. I think I may have been there. Well, he was saying how, he says, the proof of this is everywhere you will hear Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Sunday, then Monday. So Sunday is the sun's day. Monday is the moon's day. Lundi in French. They say, lunar day. So Prabhupada would say, essentially he was saying, this proves that the sun is closer than the moon. Because first, when he was making this point, I was thinking, why is Prabhupada saying this? What is he talking about? What? And so he would say, no, the sun is higher than the moon. And if you say, just in common, you know, in the world, people understanding, they put the sun first. So in any case, so the moon is higher than the sun above the plane of Bhumandala. Then above that, you have nakshatras, you have stars there. And I think it's above that that you have, of course, we think of them as stars, like the Big Dipper, as I was saying. Then you have this, there's a whole description, one chapter in the fifth canto, the Shishumar planetary system. It's in the shape of a dolphin. And yogis, they would meditate, just like you can meditate on the universal form. In fact, that's the first step in God realization, you know, in the second canto, when Shukadeva Goswami begins speaking. First, of course, he glorifies pure devotional service, basically, hearing, chant, and remembering. But then when he talks about a practice, he talks about meditating on the universal form. So some yogis, they meditate on the universal form as is described in the Bhagavatam, as we tend to understand it. You know, the mountains are the stacks of his bones, and the rivers are his veins, and those kinds of things. But another representation of Krishna is this Shishumar planetary system. It's in the shape of a dolphin. So sometimes yogis, they meditate on that. I'm pretty sure that's also included in all these planets that go around the pole star. So the pole star, again, this is where Dhruva Maharaj resides. Now Prabhupada says something. Let's see if I can find this. Oh, here it is. I thought this was quite interesting. This is from the fifth canto. I'll read the translation, 5.23.2. Established by the supreme will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the pole star, which is the planet of Dhruva, constantly shines as the central pivot for all the stars and planets. The unsleeping, invisible, most powerful time factor causes these luminaries to revolve around the pole star without cessation. So again, the unsleeping, invisible, most powerful time factor. Now this is one of the characteristics of time that you comes up over and over. In fact, it's even symbolic, is that it's irresistible. Or there's one verse where Prabhupada uses the word indefatigable. I thought it was indefatigable, but I looked it up as indefatigable time. So, of course, the root there is fatigue. It never tires. Time never tires. Time never goes to sleep. Time never stops. And that's one reason why time is a representative of God, because it never stops and it controls everything. There are many places in the Bhagavatam where it says, you are this. You are time. Or time is you, that kind of thing comes up. So many things are said to be the Supreme Lord. I was thinking today and reading in today's verse how Kardama Muni, of course, it's Lord Vishnu that he's speaking to. So it's throughout the earlier cantos of the Bhagavatam, most of the prayers are to Lord Vishnu. So we always hear this kind of thing where it talks about his cosmic influence and so on. So he's often glorified as time by different persons offering prayers in the earlier cantos because he's controlling everything. Basically, Prabhupada would use this point that how can you say you're God because you're controlled by time? So time is more powerful than you. Can you stop time? Can you stop getting old? I was listening to one tape where Prabhupada was giving this example how we're subordinate, and there was apparently a new person in the audience. And he was challenging the idea that he couldn't control things, I think it was, something like that. And Prabhupada said, no, you're forced to get old. And the man was saying, no, it's okay. I will just dictate it. And Prabhupada says, you could say that now, but I am an old man and there are so many problems, he said. So you can say, in your armchairs, philosophy, oh, it's all right, I'm just going with the flow. Well, you don't like that flow, actually. So here's the purport to this verse. It is distinctly stated herein that all the luminaries, the planets and stars revolve by the influence of the supreme time factor. The time factor is another feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone is under the influence of the time factor, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so kind and loves his devotee, Dhruva Maharaj, so much that he has placed all the luminaries under the control of Dhruva's planet and has arranged for the time factor to work under him or with his cooperation. So Prabhupada is equating this revolution of the planetary systems around Dhruva as time, because it signifies time or designates time. It's interesting the way he has arranged for the time factor to work under him, because he's above it and they're all circumambulating, or not ambulating, but circling him. But then he qualifies a little bit, he says, or with his cooperation. Everything is actually done according to the will and direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But to make his devotee Dhruva the most important individual within the universe, the Lord has placed the activities of the time factor under his control. Quite amazing the way. It's wonderful the way Prabhupada brings it out. It's about his love for Dhruva. He's given him this position which is in control of time. He's placed the time factor under his control. Of course, we can take this as in kind of metaphorical way, but that Krishna is always under the control of his devotees. So Krishna is the time factor. So this is one indication of how Krishna is under control of his devotees. It's considered to be Krishna's greatest quality, bhakta vasyata, which means he's under the control of his devotees. He tells Durvasa Muni, I'm not independent. It's not up to me what happens to you. Of course, that pastime is significant in relation to this also, because the Sudarshan Chakra is also said to be the representative of time. In fact, this Sudarshan Chakra course, it says it has, you know, blades. Its blades are as sharp as a razor, and we know when Krishna wants to cut off someone's head, it happens in an instant. Isn't that the story of when he killed Shishupal? He cut it so clean that not a drop of blood fell in the sacrificial arena. Didn't want to pollute the sacrificial arena, so it just no blood came out. Instantly sealed. So it's so sharp. And it's so powerful. So what happened, of course, at the end of that pastime when Durvasa Muni returns, because you know, Lord Vishnu is telling him, no, you have to get forgiveness from Ambarish Maharaj. So I don't know if you remember how this started out, when Durvasa Muni became angry at Ambarish Maharaj, so he pulled out a hair, right, and he threw it down, and he created this big fiery demon. And it says that Dhruva Maharaj didn't even flinch. This, you know, what would normally be an extremely terrifying demon is ready to devour him, and it says he didn't even flinch, he didn't even blink. Because for one thing, he knew Krishna had promised that Sudarshan Chakra will always, this was already a prior arrangement, it's mentioned earlier in the Bhagavatam, that the Sudarshan Chakra was more or less on standby to protect Dhruva Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj, so he didn't flinch. So anyway, of course, then what happens is the Sudarshan Chakra comes and destroys this demon and starts chasing Durvasa Muni all over the universe. And finally he goes to Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu says, you have to get the forgiveness of Ambarish Maharaj. So when he goes there, when Durvasa and the Sudarshan Chakra arrive on the scene, then Ambarish Maharaj starts offering all these prayers to the Sudarshan Chakra. Very nice. Now he's glorifying the Sudarshan Chakra. One of the things there are many different characteristics of Sudarshan, or what he represents in relationship to the Supreme Lord there. One of them, he says that you're the original vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the idea, this suggests that the vision is that, of course, Krishna is always overseeing everything. He's the overseer. So that can be also part of what Sudarshan Chakra represents, because it's also said to be like a blazing light, extremely blazing light. It lights up everything. So, and again, time, because time is always present, time sees everything. Everything is present, and we know there are three phases of time. So time, you might say, the past is stored in time, present is now, and then the future is also there. One of the things Sariputta talked about in this lecture that I started reading about was this. They had this idea that this body, whatever makes up this body, that it exists in some kind of subtle pattern in the future. So it will continue to exist in some kind of subtle pattern. But then he said, but that would imply that it existed in the past too. And he gets into this explanation. He says, but it doesn't work out. He said, this is a paradox, but they're not able to read. So they just accept the future part, but they don't accept the past part because it doesn't agree with their philosophy. So anyway, he gives some analysis of what the scientists, because one thing, I actually, I looked for this online. I said, what is the scientific explanation of time? And basically the answer I got was they don't really have what you might call a philosophical explanation of what time is. What do? They just know how to measure it. They have ways of measuring it. Of course, now we have the atomic clocks. But they don't have necessarily, at least any kind of agreed upon philosophy of what time is. It's sort of like it just is. Time is. And of course, we could respond, yes, that time. Of course, Prabhupada, he would say that, well, of course, time is also equated with death. Death is time, too. It's your end time. But because time is leading you to that point, and your time in this body is going to end, so time is sometimes compared to death. So Prabhupada, of course, he would say, for the atheist, death is God, right? So time is also God. You can't, what is definition of God is Ishvara. So Ishvara means the supreme controller. Parameshwara, the supreme controller. So he's controlling everything. He's controlling you. He's controlling your death. He's controlling your span of life in this world. So you're under that control. So the time factor is, in that sense, Krishna making everything happen. Nothing happens. There's a kind of joke about time. It says, why does time pass? Because time makes everything happen. You can think of it, as I was saying, about the constituents of material nature. So nothing happens until time is there, obviously. There has to be time. So there's a joke that time is what exists so that not everything happens at the same time. not so everything doesn't happen at once. We have time. So, of course, that's true. And what's that? You know, everything unfolds because of time. It gets it started. So this also, in the context of talking about time, we hear about creation, maintenance, and destruction. That's also, we tend to think of, as I was saying, time is often generally referred to as a destructive force. But of course, it's a creative force too, because you can't get started unless there's time there. And this is tied in with the mixing of the modes of material nature. You have to have some rajas for things to start. Sattva-gun is just equilibrium, or peacefulness, calmness. So to get things happening, that's why you have Lord Brahma as the creator, and he's the guna avatar for the mode of passion. So time also gets things started, and it maintains it through a period, and then it destroys everything at the end. So here we see Karma Muni, he's glorifying Krishna in a kind of metaphorical way, because he's talking about how, well, he's giving this conception of time as being a wheel that has different aspects of it, and you can analyze it according to different times throughout a year, especially, and seasons. Prabhupada mentioned here in the purport about Chaturmasya. We always think of Chaturmasya as the 4 months of the rainy season, and we do, of course, Kartik comes at the end. But actually, there are 3 4-month periods. This is the one that we emphasize. It's a time for performing austerities and so on. But there are 3 Chaturmasyas, 3 periods of 4 months in a year. Okay, so I'll read the translation again. Your wheel, which has 3 knaves, nobody's got a dictionary on their phone, they can look up what a knave is, rotates around the axis of the imperishable Brahman. I think it probably has different definitions, actually. I think a nave is also an architectural element. Your wheel, which has 3 knaves, rotates around the axis of the imperishable Brahman. It has 13 spokes, 360 joints, 6 rims, and numberless leaves carved in it. So there's 6 rims. Did Prabhupada say in the purport? This must refer to the seasons, because there's 6 seasons. We think of 4, but there are 6. I think even in India, you talk about 6, isn't it? Yes. Though its revolution cuts short the lifespan of the entire creation, this wheel of tremendous velocity cannot touch the lifespan of the devotees of the Lord. I didn't even get into that topic. Devotees, that's something we can be happy about, right? This terrifying time factor. That was Prabhupada was sometimes, because sometimes people would hear, Prabhupada makes his point how time or death can affect the devotees, and people say, well, what do you mean? We see devotees are getting old and they're dying. And Prabhupada says, yes, but devotees' death is not real death. They're going to Krishna. So it's a different thing. Okay. Rangavinda Prabhu.
I was wondering, in Ramayana, there is a story of Bhushundi, who had a doubt whether Ramchandra is Supreme Lord or not. So then, as he came to test, well, he went through Brahma and Shiva to ask that. They say, you go and check yourself. So it's a long story.
His name
story.
Is Bhushundi, you said?
Bhushundi, the crow, okay. Who talks about Ramkatha. But my point is that when he, in a playful mood, Lord Ram was distributing pancake to different birds.
Pancakes.
And at one point he came a little closer, and then he was really thinking, is he really Supreme Lord? But somehow or other, mystically, he entered into the body of the Lord, and he traveled for million years, millions of universes. Then he came back, and he thought inside, that how did it start? Why I'm flying like all of a sudden going here and there? And then Lord Ram spit out his some pancake part, and then Bhushundi came out with that. So my question is like, was that million years was like a moment to Lord Ram? Like, so how is like calculated? Like,
I don't know.
Like a bewildering.
It went inside God, so anything can happen. I don't know how to explain it. He was beyond time. Yeah, things can happen. Don't they say that when you dream, it seems like a really long time is after you, just a few moments, you know? So there's things act differently on different planes. So certainly, you know, Lord Ram can create, I mean, it could be just some kind of illusion also he created for him that it seemed that way. He has the power to do that. What exactly went on? What a story.
Another thing you mentioned, Prabhupada says that logically, well, it's a Sunday than Monday, so sun is closer and moon is a little farther. Does it mean that Venus and Saturn is the farthest?
Yeah, I'm just they're above there. They're higher. Higher above the plane of Bhumandala. The planets are higher above. In fact, I think those planets come after the nakshatras, the stars, the description in the fifth canto. But I think, well, maybe this isn't all of them. I'm not sure. Fifth canto is so hard to understand. But I get that little bit of insight about how it's, you know, the sun is above. The sun is high, is not as high above the plane of Bhumandala as the moon is. So that was another reason why Prabhupada said they never went to the moon. And of course, the distance is given there too. I don't know what the distance is. 100,000, no, 100 million yojanas or something like that. And I think the moon is like twice as far as the sun. Something, I forget exactly, but anyway, it's a weird abode. This material world is difficult to understand. Just reading last night about in the Krishna Sundarbha, Jiva Goswami mentions this planet Vaikuntha. There's a Vaikuntha planet in the material world. It's above Brahmaloka. So we're Vikunta, right? There's the mother's name is Vikunta. This is described maybe in the Bhagavatam, I think. So the mother's name is Vikunta, the son's name is Vaikunta. And there, Jiva Goswami in his commentary, he said that this is where Jaya and Vijaya came from. The Vaikunta in the material world. So whatever, you can take that as you, whatever. It doesn't matter whether Vaikunta is in, you know, inside this shell of the universe or outside, it's still Vaikuntha. But that's the first time I've heard that. So anyway, there's lots of things going on in this universe. Ragatmika Prabhu? Oh, Stita D. He's got the mic.
I ain't giving it up.
Possession is 9/10 of the law.
I was once listening to a bunch of, a selection of Prabhupada lectures in chronological order. Is how, you know, because MP3s, you can do whatever.
On what?
Prabhupada lectures, and I happened to be, it was in chronological order, this list.
Oh, okay.
So they're going through this list, and all of a sudden I came across that, maybe it's the same one you were talking about, it was in Los Angeles, about, yeah. And I'm just listening, and I'm like, what the heck, where did that come from? You know, all of a sudden. And I was talking to Pushkar about it, and he says, oh, that happened just after the fifth canto got published.
Yeah.
So, the thought then comes, you know, in parties, bucking up the devotees, like, you know, if you can't process this, just push it away. You know, it could have been a lot of things going on there. But he did come up with a lot of, you know, creative explanations.
Yeah.
And, you know, because the devotees are all like, what the heck we do with this, you know? anyways, I'm not saying that's exactly what was going on.
It was funny that Prabhupada grabbed onto that. It was like,
yeah.
He was really kind of excited that he was talking about. I was saying I studied French in school, and in French, when you learn the days of the week, you start with Monday. Actually, you don't start with Sunday.
Yeah.
At least that's the way I learned it in school.
Yeah, it's
Monday, Tuesday, so Sunday would be the last day of the week. So anyway, so it was like the Prabhupada, really, I think sometimes he was looking for things that would influence Westerners. You know. So here's some evidence. See, the sun comes before the moon.
Yeah, you know, what's all the factors involved in these, you know, the descriptions, you know, we don't necessarily have the same reference points, you know, who knows.
Yeah.
But it was interesting how you brought up, you know, this, we're talking about time, and within the modern science, they don't have that definition, they just calculate it. And, you know, so, you know, that's the experience of time, you know, within the,
yeah.
And they say it's relative, according to gravity and this and that, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then when, you know, then they're talking like the time factor, you know, it's under Dhruva. It sounds like the influence of time, perhaps, you know, it's not, mm-hmm. I don't know. It, you know, it's interesting stuff, for sure.
Did you say that the atom is not the smallest particle? What is?
You mean in modern science?
Yeah.
Well, the atom has, well, D can tell you more. There's lots of things inside the atom. Yeah, they're subatomic particles. You may have heard this expression, okay. Subatomic particles. So there are things inside the atom.
Okay.
They're always trying to smash it more and more. I always get to the point, I think, well, what is it? Because you always want to ask the next thing, well, what's that made of? Right? Mm. So you get down to the smallest thing, and you want to say, well, what's that made of? So I came to the same point with, you know, our definition. Well, what is that smallest particle of matter made of? What is matter exactly? I'm not sure I have an answer to that.
Okay.
I mean, it's like you can't define it. You just have to say it's matter. Or these constituents of matter. One thing I was curious about, and I think I found the answer. Sometimes things aren't clear, but are there atoms of air that are specifically air atoms? And are there atoms of water? You know, the basic elements that we hear about. Is there a water atom? Is there I was thinking space? I don't think there's a space atom. But somehow space is a thing, you might say. So I don't know, these things are really hard to get around.
You also said that Ambarish Maharaj knew that the Sudarshan Chakra was on standby.
Yeah.
How did he know that?
Well, I don't know. I think it's implied that I was basically implying that he knew because he didn't get upset. But it is mentioned earlier in the Bhagavatam. Actually, as the story just begins, I think when it's talking about Ambarish Maharaj, it says that the Lord gave him the Sudarshan Chakra to be his protection, something like that. And I've come across in other places the idea that it was like a standing order from the Lord to Sudarshan Chakra. I want you to protect this devotee. That comes out. So it wasn't just a one-time thing that he just showed up, that he was assigned that task. Yes, Trivikram Prabhu.
Yeah, so time goes like beyond years. It goes into yugas and kalpas and manvantaras and then Brahma days and then Brahma lifetime. It ends with Brahma lifetime. The universe ends with Brahma lifetime, and so is the calculation, you see, mm-hmm. in the material world. But the yugas and the kalpas and the manvantaras and so is even beyond science. I mean, they have a way of calculating their eras also, but the Vedic era is more accurate. I mean, it's accurate, you know, and you calculate.
The calculation is given in that calculation of time from the atom up to Brahma's time. So you start with the smallest time, and Brahma's time is called Dwiparardha. I mentioned this before, I find it interesting because Dwiparardha means two half padas. Pada is a day of Brahma. So for some reason, his day is always referred to as Dwiparardha, two half days. I don't know why it's stated. Apparently, there's some difference between the first half of his day and the second half. Right now, we're just at the beginning of the second half of his life, actually. I mean his life, yeah, his life is, not his day, his life, I'm sorry. Dwiparardha means his lifespan, 360 trillion, 400 billion years.
Yeah, his 12
Yeah. He sleeps for 12 hours, Lord Brahma. We only sleep 6, he sleeps 12. He does a lot of work, so he needs a long night. Maharaj?
Just a small point that there's this St. Thomas of Aquinas, and what was the name of the one around the beginning of the millennium, that the most famous Catholic saint is, I can't remember right now. Anyway, he was saying, I always think I understand what time is until I actually try to define it, until I actually think about it. So what we're discussing in this class is also a mystery for...
Yeah.
So we should be thankful that our, quote, theology, not quote, our theology is so comprehensive, the scriptures go into so much detail, that there are answers. We may not know where to find it right off the bat. We have the Veda base, but we have answers to all these conundrums, all these mysteries. But in the ultimate issue, we have to accept some mystical or mysterious aspect of things, because Krishna is beyond our rational faculties, the ultimate issue.
Yes. It's Krishna ultimately, and he's the
Saint mystery. Augustine, Stita D is reminding me that was the earlier one.
Okay, let's stop here. We're a couple of minutes over. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
So I looked up what a nave is. A nave is the central part of a church, starting from the front door up to the transept.
Oh, that's in a church. Yeah, I thought
that's
it was
what
part
the
of a
definition of a nave is.
That's the only definition?
That's the only definition.
So it's some kind of an impression, I guess, like something concave.
Well, sometimes it's raised to the aisle between the pews.
Uh-huh.